You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePrey and you get a whole service just on
it. How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the summer series of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and hoping you're having a wonderful summer break. Over the next few weeks, we'll revisit some of the more memorable moments of the show in the lead-up to our return in February 2008. One of the great things about Tech Talk Radio is meeting and talking to people who do a lot for the community and who are high achievers in their industry, and today's program is no exception. We recently spoke to Senior Constable Susan McLean from Victoria Police about cyberbullying. Cyberspace is becoming a great social networking environment of the modern era, with more and more people turning to social networking sites such as MySpace and Facebook. For those of you who have been living under a rock, these social networking sites allow users to share their personal lives with their friends online for all to see. These sort of sites tend to become the seat of cyberbullying for small but a growing group of troublemakers. Aside from social networking sites are mobile phones, SMS and email. No longer can children, young adults or even adults for that matter, leave their school or place of employment and return home to the sanctuary of the house. Being taunted by annoying SMSs and anonymous emails is now a real problem. Susan has some invaluable information about what to do if you, your friends or family become victim of cyberbullying. There are laws in Australia which take this sort of activity into consideration, with some severe penalties for those on the wrong end of the keyboard. Susan even tells us of the sort of behaviour to look out for in young people as a sign of bullying and what parents should do if they find their child a victim. So stay tuned to Tech Talk Radio as we rejoin our visit with Senior Constable Susan McLean.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. The panel this evening is Dr. Ron, Mark Diggins, of which two of us are parents. And let's start off. We're going to be talking all about cyberbullying. It's at the bus stop, it's at your lounge room, maybe even your bedroom. The new breed of bullies has moved from the playground and they've gone digital. While victims have previously been able to escape their tormentors by avoiding school at parks, this leap into the virtual intimidation means victims can now be reached in their former sanctuary, such as their homes. With the convenience of modern technology, bullying has become even easier. An estimated 70% of under 18s have access to mobile phones. 53% have access to the internet, either at home, school, or other public facilities. The new wave of bullying has many forms. It could be in the form of short messaging, SMSs as we all know of them today, or even text messaging via mobile phones, online instant messaging, chat room harassment, and in the extreme, hate websites set up to alienate and ridicule peers. Most digital bullying occurs between friends who have fallen out. Petty teenage squabbles often turn nasty when the former friend passes a mobile number or email address onto others, encouraging them to harass the victim. Well, modern technology allows us to learn, share, and engage in otherwise what would normally seem to be a relatively interesting pastime of communicating online. But while the potential for communications is great, so too are the potential dangers. Joining us on the panel tonight is Senior Constable Susan McLean from Victoria Police. Good evening, Susan.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Thank you very much for your time this evening.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
I'm currently the Youth Resource Officer for the City of Manningham. I work from the Doncaster Police Station, and it's my role to look at all issues surrounding youth in my municipality. So that's youth offending, youth as victims, and any other issues that have a negative or positive impact on our youth.
Well, there's been a lot in the news lately, and even last night, I think we were talking before we came on air, a 23-year-old was, his party invitation made it onto the internet, and he ended up in hospital because of it. Is this sort of the thing that's going to happen without a bit of education, do you think?
I think the problem of the internet, I mean, the internet's got some wonderful features, but I think the way that some of our students and young people are using the internet leaves it open to a lot of potential dangers. And I think that a lot of people don't think through their actions. They don't think through what the consequences could be. It is faceless, and it can provide an easy fix or a little bit of what they might consider fun at no expense to them.
Now, you've recently been to the United States. And what was it, Protecting Children Online?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have a study tour to America. The background to that was probably about 2 years ago, I started to get inundated with requests from schools to assist them in relation to cyberbullying and harassment issues. And it was becoming noticeable to me that this was an emerging trend and one that needed to be dealt with and looked at. And I'd started to do some research online and found some programs in the States because, of course, they were a little bit more advanced than us. And through some collaboration with the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention in America, Victoria Police and my local Rotary Clubs, I secured funds for a study tour.
So when you say a little bit more advanced, you mean they were further down the track, the trends were becoming more apparent?
Yes, look, we've got an emerging problem here, and in the States it's fairly well entrenched. They have already put in place a lot of educational programs, those programs have been evaluated, whereas we're just beginning to see this emerging as a problem, and we're sort of a little bit behind the eight ball in looking at what's available.
How does the legal system in the US treat this type of offence compared to what we do?
Look, in the States, they have, all through America, they have what are called ICAC task forces, which are Internet Crimes Against Children task forces, and they are dedicated groups of police, often more than one in a state, but usually one per state, that just deal solely with Internet Crimes Against Young People, which can be online sexual solicitation, and it can be the bullying and harassment. Their penalties are very strong. They have a range of penalties, including child sex tourism. They have penalties for soliciting children online, but that they are more advanced or more down the track with some of these issues than we are. We're only starting to see some of these problems emerging here.
Is it prolific over there? Like, is it on every street corner, every schoolyard, or is it still minorly in the back of everyone's mind?
No, it's definitely not a minor problem in the States. I was lucky enough to spend a couple of days working with the Dallas Police, their Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, and just working with one detective in particular and just looking at the number of jobs that she was getting in each day from what they call the Cyber Tip Line, which is an online, it's a phone-in line where parents can report inappropriate images being sent to their children, bullying and harassment, online solicitation, and that's only one of the means that jobs come to the notice of law enforcement in the States. But she certainly was getting two and three jobs a day, and that was just one detective in one police agency.
So it'd be safe to say that the levels of prosecutions over there is on the rise for this type of offence?
Most definitely, and while I was in the States for the almost 4 weeks, you know, every second day in the news, in the paper, on the TV, there was an article about someone being charged with online sexual solicitation, bullying and harassment, all the associated offences.
So can we draw parallels with what's happening in Australia compared to the United States? Are we literally going down that same path, or is there minor, you know, variations? Are we seeing different things unfold here?
I think we will see a slight variant of what we see in the States because we are a different socioeconomic climate here. Australia is a slightly different culture to America. But historically, Australia was geographically isolated. So crime trends, if they arrived here, were often watered down. The tyranny of distance, prevented a lot of the real serious stuff reaching our shores. But with the cyber world, there are no boundaries. It's like a big umbrella over all of us, and I can be chatting online to someone in any part of the world as easy as I can chat to someone next door to me. I don't think we will ever get to the volume of internet-related crime that we see in America simply because we are a smaller population. But what I think will happen is that while we see the emerging trend of bullying and harassment, I think we can only believe that the increase in online sexual solicitation through the chat rooms, through the live gaming sites, will increase.
Well, we're talking about the criminal element here. We had Bruce Matthews in from ACMA the other day talking about spam. He noted a trend in spam from people just taking advantage of the technology and wanting to sell their wares, now to being more a crime-related, crime syndications and the like, trying to go fishing for information and steal things rather than sell their wares. With cyber technologies at the moment where kids get online, do you think the exploitation from a criminal element is sort of kicking in here, or is it really still playground stuff and kids versus kids?
I think in relation to young people, it's still kids versus kids. There are certainly groups out there that try and steal identities, try and, engage a person into divulging information that perhaps they shouldn't, and then can be used to create a new identity for someone, or can be used for some sort of e-commerce fraud. But essentially, the problem that I deal with day in, day out, the problem that our schools are dealing with in the communities, is the issue of cyberbullying and harassment. It's what's occurring at night in the bedrooms via the text messages, and then the next day at school where the welfare coordinator, the year level coordinator or the principal spends the whole day running around trying to sort out who said what to who, which computer it came from and who's involved.
So with schools in Victoria, in Australia, how do they deal with cyberbullying? Like it's probably something which a parent would bring their attention to, would it be not, or the kids come up and do
it? It's normally because the victim will alert the school to it, or by their actions or inaction will alert the school to the fact that there's a problem. A lot of times parents have absolutely no idea that their child is either A, the victim, or B, the perpetrator of this sort of behaviour.
Apparently 40% of boys and 25% of girls who are bullied don't tell their friends, and even lots of adults are bullied too. I guess it's a huge problem that affects many people, both male, female, young and old. If we've got that sort of level of people not sort of even giving an indication about being bullying, what are we seeing now? Is this just the tip of the iceberg and that a majority of people are just letting it go through to the keeper?
Look, I think when this first started to emerge, and if I go back, 1994 was the very first time I got a report of an internet bullying type incident. And the circumstances of that was that a girl had fallen out with some other friends. So as a bit of a punishment, this group of girls got the other girl, the one that they alienated, they got all her personal details and they posted them on a adult chat site and offered her for free sex. And you can just imagine the volume and the type of phone calls that that family received. And that was in 1994.
So how did they deal with that?
It was very, very difficult. They had to change their phone number. They lived in fear for quite a long period of time because their address had been published on this internet site. But the girls doing it had absolutely no idea, or had not even thought through the possible consequences. They thought, oh yeah, they'll have a bit of fun, few funny phone calls, and then we'll move on.
So what started off as a harmless prank in no uncertain terms ended up being something that was costly, I guess, at the end of the day, if this family had to change addresses and do all that sort of stuff. What were the ramifications for the particular, the young girls that thought it was a good idea at the time?
The girls that were offending at that time basically were given a bit of a telling off. The victim's family didn't pursue it with criminal charges, which they could have. But I think what we see now is that because so much is available online to look at, if you look at YouTube, if you look at basically anything you want to see, you can find online if you know where to search. And I think it normalizes behaviors that might otherwise have been thought to be inappropriate and criminal. So young people will, I suppose, validate their behaviour by saying, oh, but I've seen it online, I've seen someone else do it. No one else ever seems to get into trouble, so I'll just join in. And their ability to make a good decision is diminished.
And that was sort of going to be one of my next questions, actually, normalising the process where what you see online and if somebody else has done it seems to make it okay in the schoolyard, yep, and okay from the young kids' point of view, maybe because they don't have any experience about what's right or wrong. But in effect, it doesn't. It's just that it's sort of promoting, it's copycat sort of scenario, isn't it, where they come along and they say, oh, well, such and such did it, I can do it too.
Yeah, and I think too, because they don't often see the consequences of their person's poor choice, so they might not see criminal charges being laid, they might not see punitive measures from a school, that they think that, yep, you know, it's fine, I've done it, they've done it, so let's all join in and, you know, be part of this game. And often when kids post things online, their intention is for a very small audience to view it. And I think they think that it's an audience that they can manage, and they don't actually see that it has the potential to be exposed to hundreds and millions of people. Because, of course, once you post something on a public website or on a website that's accessible to a range of people, you've got no control over it. So whilst, you know, you might have 50 friends or 30 friends that you know can access your MySpace, for example, or your Pixo site, that's fine. But it's the 50 friends that each of those 50 friends have access to that, once it gets out there in cyberspace, there is absolutely no way of getting it back. And I just think that kids don't understand this. Parents often don't understand this either. But they don't think through. They just think for now, they're very much instant gratification. They don't think through what could happen tomorrow.
What about peer group pressure? We see a lot of that when it comes to drugs and alcohol. Are we seeing terrorism from a cyber point of view where kids pick on each other? Is that because others put them up to it?
There are a range of things that occur online in relation to the cyberbullying and harassment. There are where people post a inappropriate website, which is aimed to hurt someone. They might put someone's head on a horrible body or an animal's body or a naked body. So they'll make up a website which is encourages people to leave nasty comments. Then there's the popularity contest. So you might have a Pixo site or a MySpace site, but you might have 10 friends and someone else might have 57 friends attached. So therefore, the person with 10 friends is considered inferior and a loser and no one likes
you. So it's competition.
There's a lot of competition.
You've got more friends than me or...
Yep, or how many hits did your website get last night? You know, I got 57 hits and you got 5, so, you know, they don't like you. Or there's a competition to see how many celebrities that you can get to accept you as their friend. So... for example, you might go into someone's MySpace and see that person A has got 10 well-known celebrities attached to their web to their MySpace. Someone else might have none. Mm-hmm. So therefore, they are less popular.
Can you just explain to us what a MySpace site is? So, like, I hadn't been there till a couple of weeks ago because I heard about this and knew you were coming on the show, but there'd be a lot of people out there like myself who've never been to a MySpace site. So just explain what the site does.
Okay, what MySpace is, it's what we call a social networking site. If you go historically, kids after school, they used to go to school, then they'd hang out in the street with all their neighbours and they'd kick the footy, and that's where they'd socialise. From there, they sort of moved to shopping malls where they'd hang out there with their friends, and from there, they've moved to cyberspace. So I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours? But it is their space to socialise. Through that, enterprising companies have set up free host your own website. So historically, to have a website yourself, you had to be a multinational company because it cost a lot of money.
Yep.
Some of these, like MySpace, for example, it's free. Pixo okay. is free. They are free host your own website. So it's basically Google the name of the social networking site you want to be involved in and just click the mouse to get yourself set up on a site. There are no checks and balances on it. I could set up a website as any person in the whole world. No one checks what I'm entering into my MySpace as being correct. So no one knows whether the picture I post is actually me, whether the details I put about myself are true.
So you could change your name or have an alias or something like that?
Exactly. And also I can put in a false age. So I can be older or younger than what I really am, for whatever reason. Now, a lot of young girls, if you go into MySpace, for example, and set up your web page as an under 18, it's automatically set to private. That's one of the security features. But if you enter details as an over 18, well, then it allows anyone to have a look at your website. So a lot of 13-year-old girls don't want to be 13. They want to be 18. Or considered older, so they won't put in a truthful age. Or they, in America, what they're doing is when it says age, they basically just put in 99. So if you go into MySpace and search for 99-year-old females, you get hundreds of thousands of them.
Okay.
Susan, if there are parents listening that they know that their children have maybe have encountered objectionable material on YouTube or MySpace or Flickr, like a photo sharing site or one of those sorts of social networking sites, is there a way that they can contact the organisations to have the problem remedied, or should they contact them in the first instance? Should they contact the local police, or what do you recommend that they do in order to resolve the situation?
First of all, they should contact their internet service provider and let them know that they've found this objectionable material, whatever it is. Secondly, they can notify the local police. Now, what that will do, I suppose, is it's going to depend on what's there, what's been said, what's been passed between computers as to whether criminal offences are involved. If it's school-based, I always advise them to advise the school and let them know what's going on, because, you know, schools can't... We've all got to work together. Parents, law enforcement and schools and the wider community have to work together for this problem. So it's pointless only having part of the circle informed. So
sure,
it's vitally important that everyone in the loop gets kept in the loop and gets informed about what's going on.
And does
on.
What they can do. Yep.
Does what they can do. Most of the reputable internet service providers, the hosts of these sites, when alerted to the fact that there is inappropriate material there, where their site has been used for bullying and harassment, will in fact pull the site.
Okay, yep.
So that they do have a bit of a good corporate citizen hat there happening. But for some of the smaller ones or some of the ones that aren't perhaps so reputable, they might need a little bit more encouragement.
I have seen links on some sites, like the photo sharing sites and things like Flickr and those sorts of sites, where they do have a link actually built in maybe to each page, and it says report abuse or report this page. So if you are concerned, you can probably click on a link that's in front of you, and they do have a system in place whereby you can report objectionable content and things like that. So people probably should be aware of that as well.
They should be aware of that. ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, have a reporting line for inappropriate content. But basically, if you find something that's inappropriate about your child or something that's worrying, you need to do something about it, because it will not go away.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Joining us tonight is Senior Constable Susan McLean. We're talking all about safety online for our kids. When we return, I'd like to talk a little bit about the technology that the kids are using and some of the telltale signs for the mums and dads, just to keep tabs on what their kids are doing. And then potentially like to talk about the law and how Australian law looks after this sort of technology, the ramifications for parents, if as well as being guardians for their kids, and the likes. If you've got any questions, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. Plasma TVs may be banned. Oh, my goodness.
I don't care. They will pry my plasma out of my cold, dead hand.
Microsoft issued 7 security patches in a regular update.
Yep, there's a debate as to whether by turning off the ads, you're effectively stealing the content.
What about the three of us? We can't give up our day jobs.
Yes, absolutely.
We could be the three amigos.
We could.
Oh, listen to this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Here's another great moment in technology
on Tech Talk Radio.
The transistor will likely go down as one of the greatest inventions in modern history, ranking right up there with the car, the telephone, and Gutenberg's printing press. William Shockley and his team at Bell Laboratories invented the transistor in 1947. Put most simply, a transistor is a tiny electronic device used to control the flow of electricity. But the transistor is more than that. It has 2 abilities. The first is to amplify electronic signals, and the other is to switch on or off, letting current through or blocking it as necessary. Transistors are in practically all modern electronics these days, from musical birthday cards to your car and your personal computer. Since 1947, and this is what made the computer revolution possible, it has become cheaper and cheaper to pack more transistors onto a computer chip every year. This is known as Moore's Law, which Intel founder Gordon Moore defined in the 1960s. He said that every year manufacturing would get so good that double the number of transistors would be able to fit on a chip for the same price. A simple logic gate comprises about 20 transistors, compared to an average computer chip in a modern computer, which can include as many as 1 billion transistors. This has been another great moment in technology on Tech Talk Radio. It's that time of the year again, and everybody at Tech Talk Radio would like to wish you and yours a happy and safe Christmas. And we look forward to keeping you up to date with all the breaking tech news and gossip next year on Tech Talk Radio. Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage?
What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus have again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
And you put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service. Just on
how does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
I understand to give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open the hands of those good that you're not expecting, even if they do look like it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome back. We're talking all about child safety online. And joining us on the panel this evening is Senior Constable Susan McLean from Victoria Police. And you missed a great show while we were in the break there. We're talking all about things as you do in the studio. School kids and school environments is what we want to talk about in just a sec. But beforehand, let's talk a little bit about the technology. You've heard us talk about instant messaging. You've obviously heard us talk about mobile phones, blogs, Google and social networking sites such as MySpace, all becoming very popular. Now, kids obviously have a little bit of peer group pressure. We were talking about this in just a few moments ago too, where if kids don't actually get access to the internet at a younger age, they may not be considered to be that cool if mum and dad don't let them have the internet. Is this, and Mark, you were talking about this before too, being a dad of a
6-year-old.
Mm-hmm. How does that put, how do the kids react at school, I guess, if they're not allowed to use the internet at home? Are they teased? Are they upset?
It can potentially be a problem. I know a lot of parents think, well, the only safe way I know how to deal with this is not have the internet, because they have no idea, they don't feel comfortable themselves, so they think, okay, I won't deal with it, I won't discuss it, so we just won't have it. I had a mother say to me the other day, well, I've solved the problem, we don't have a computer or the internet. And when I asked
her, is that irresponsible from a parent's point of view?
Look, it is one way around the problem initially, but that was actually worse was when I asked her how her teenage child actually managed to keep up with his schoolwork, because the internet and computers is really integral to all education. Her response was, oh, I sent him to the local library. Well, the local library has no filters on their computers, has no one there sitting to see who little Johnny's sitting next to, or what sort of person that might be, or what sort of site that the person next to little Johnny might be accessing. So, you know, whilst in theory it wasn't a bad idea, she hadn't really thought through the further ramifications of not having it at home in a controlled environment that she could, in fact, monitor.
So being a good parent can be detrimental if you don't think a little bit beyond what your kids are doing. Take, for example, mobile phones, for example. I reckon every kid these days would have one of those. Associated with mobile phones, and Mark, you're a testament to this too, is normally an email address. You can email a mobile phone, you can SMS a mobile phone. Now, they're not filtered. The parents have no control over that. So if you're not going to give your kids access at home in an environment where you can monitor it, or an email address at home, which is more popular than a mobile, then there's ways around it.
Of course there is. And I think that it's all about providing non-emotive factual information to parents, because people of parental age did not grow up with computers. They may have them at work, they may not, but they certainly haven't been born into a family that has a computer. So for a lot of people, it's the fear of the great unknown. They fear that their children know more than them, and that's often the case. But they are also very fearful about how to go about improving their knowledge in a way that, you know, won't lose face with their children.
For all intents and purposes, a mobile phone now, Susan, is a computer as well, isn't it? If you've got it in your pocket or your school bag, you've got instant messaging applications available now on mobile phones, not just text messaging and phone calls, is it?
No, they're like mini computers in the school bag. And, you know, schools usually do have a mobile phone policy.
Yep.
Some schools enforce them. Yep, there's certainly a mobile phone policy.
So what is it? What's an average policy? Like, they have to turn them off during class, or they...
Yeah, off during class. Some schools have them. They're not allowed to be in class. They must stay in the locker. They can only come out at lunchtime. Phones that go off during class are often confiscated until the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Issues with camera phones, taking photos of other students without permission. The old photo in the toilet is a fairly common scenario. And schools have policies and procedures to deal with all this sort of stuff on a daily basis.
It'd be awfully embarrassing for a young kid to be snapped in the loo or something like that and then find themselves up on MySpace or something down the track. That's got to be...
And unfortunately, these are things that have occurred. And one of the other technologies associated with the cyberbullying and harassment is, of course, the webcams. And one of the most common scenarios we see with the webcams is the inappropriate or sexual or semi-sexual images that may have been sent from a female normally to her boyfriend, who loves her dearly and will not share the photos with anyone. But then, of course, come the next day, the whole school has the photos. And whilst it's not that hard to retrieve the photos off the computer of the boyfriend, for example, if they've gone out to his, you know, 2,000 close personal friends on his friends list...
The damage has been done, hasn't it?
The damage has been done, and they really cannot be, you know, tracked down and every single one of them retrieved.
Well, what seems like a harmless photo in the schoolyard can in fact border on child pornography in a lot of respects, can't it?
Most definitely, and I've dealt with quite a few young people who actually fit the technical definition of possessing child pornography and manufacturing child pornography. They have absolutely no idea what they've done constitutes those offences, but they're two of the offences that I see as being fairly common, where you've got a person that might take a photo of their friend or someone they don't like. They use that facial image, and then they might put that onto a naked lower body. They might put it onto to something else, which under the Act and the legislation constitutes the definition of child pornography.
All too easy to find on the internet too these days, unfortunately.
Oh, that's for sure.
What are parents' reactions when they're confronted, either as a parent of a victim or a parent of an offender? Like, are they shocked? Are they what?
They're shocked. Parents of victims very much... I suppose they're like ships floating in the ocean. They have no idea where to turn for help. They don't have the knowledge or the belief in themselves that they can actually handle it, because they don't really know what's going on and what can happen. And often the parents of the offenders have no idea what their child has been up to. And, you know, the old days where every house or most houses had one desktop computer where we advised it to be in the family room so the parent could monitor it, you know, that's really gone by the wayside to some degree, because a lot of houses are now wireless networked and a lot of households have more than one computer. So it's not unusual to find a young person in their bedroom at night on the computer, because there's a wireless hotspot there. They have a laptop.
Even the neighbour's wireless hotspot, if you're not careful.
Well, that's right. If the neighbours haven't been savvy enough to put some boundaries there on their installation, that's right. You sit out by the pool and you tap into their network and... saves you the money.
It's a very popular way of doing business presentations too, where you need internet access and you're in the city. Oh, there'll be one floating around here somewhere.
So you just drive around with your computer on your knee till you find a connection.
And a mobile phone's a very personal thing, isn't it? It's your mobile phone, not anyone else's. You don't have to share it, a bit like the laptop you were talking about. So whatever happens on the mobile phone, and as you were saying, Dr. Wrong, earlier, it's got email access, it's got, you know, instant chat, and it's got websites
that's
you can
exactly
visit.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's usually in their bedroom.
And it belongs to a
late
person.
At night.
Yeah. It's really taken out of that context of having it in the family room where it can be watched over now.
A lot of parents too, when you say to them, look, your child, you know, sent this email last night. Oh, no, they were asleep. Well, no, here's an email sent from your child's computer and it was 3 a.m. And with that, if you take away all the legal ramifications, all the issues with cyber harassment and bullying, you then have the issue of the fact that the child's not getting enough sleep, that they're accessing this technology all through the night, they're waking up very tired, they're lethargic the next day, they're not eating. So there's a whole range of other psychological issues that can be
so affects their performance, their schoolwork and all that
most,
sort of thing.
Almost just for definitely.
That reason. But seeing being stressed in its own, like as adults, when you're stressed, you're tired. You get tired a lot easier. And I guess with the torment of this sort of stuff for a kid, obviously stress is going to make them not perform as well academically in school. Getting back to the parents of offenders and also the victims, we're talking about sexual crimes here in a lot of respects in bullying if they're being taunted that way. Now, in society, if we're a victim of a car accident, if we're a victim of an assault or a robbery, we can talk to our friends, we can talk to people about it, in which in essence is a form of counselling. In this environment, we're talking about sexual type offences, which are not talked about. They're taboo. So as a result, things would fester. So parents, I would imagine, would not know where to go, as you were saying earlier, and who to talk to and how to remedy a situation, because it's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing for them. And I think too, is one of the things that came out of some study that was done in the United States when I was over there was that 96% of young people that have received an online sexual solicitation or are the victim of bullying and harassment will not tell a parent or another adult, because they fear the punishment. They fear that if they tell someone that they've been bullied and harassed online, or they tell their parent that someone sent them a pornographic image, that the outcome for them will be their parents saying, okay, no internet. And they would much rather stay connected and sort of try and muddle through than lose their internet access.
So good parenting means keeping this in the back of your mind. But what should parents look out for in respect to behaviour, in respect to online activity?
I think parents need to start from the time that their child is first using the internet. And in a lot of households, we're talking 3, 4 and 5. It's not a standalone issue. It needs to be part of all the dialogue that you are going to engage with your child all through their life. So it's no use thinking at 17 or 18, gee, I think I should talk to them about internet safety. If your child is at that age now, you need to try and open some dialogue with them for sure. But it's got to be, you know, when children are little and you buy them a bike, you get them the bike helmet, you teach them to ride, you teach them road safety. If you're having a computer in your house, you need to teach them internet safety. Talk to them about the problems out there. People are not who they see. Don't believe everything you read on the internet. Be aware that even though it is cyberspace and no one can physically touch you, there are people out there that are aiming to hurt you. So it's no different to the safety issues that you would talk to your child about anyway, but it just needs to be incorporated in any sort of dialogue. And I think that when a young person or any person is talking face-to-face with someone, that is, they see them in person, they get to read some body cues. They get to read the body language. They see the person. Do they look nice? Do they look scary? Am I getting a bad vibe from this person? So they can sort of make a bit of an informed choice about, gee, I don't think this person's quite that safe. Perhaps I'll move away. When they're online, it's an anonymous environment. So those cues that they could normally read are not there. And it might take a long period of time in the online environment before they start to think, I don't really think that this person perhaps is who they say, or I don't really like what they're saying to me. But often by this stage, they've been groomed and they're to the point of thinking, I'm not really sure whether I should, am I panicking or am I making a good decision or not?
Mm. If a parent feels that their child is a victim or an offender for that matter, what should they do?
Talk to their children. One of the things that we see is lack of sleep, tiredness, lack of appetite, missing meals, making their technology usage, be it a phone, be it the computer, the focal point of their life. So everything revolves around their digital world rather than their digital world being part of their whole being. So if you see an increase that's negative in the amount of time your children are spending online, that they're not applying themselves as normal, they might be irritable, lack of sleep, lack of appetite, you need to be having a chat to them. And what I often encourage parents to do is to try and learn as much as you can about the online environment. Now, you know, if you've got a computer at home, get on it and have a bit of a play. You're not going to blow it up. You might end up where perhaps you don't want to be, but you know, you can
so much teach your kids.
Well, that's so much your kids, but you're not going to hurt your computer trying to teach yourself some things. If your children are younger, obviously know where they're going. Sit down and talk to them about what are suitable sites. If they've got Windows Live Messenger or they're involved in any sort of instant messaging, sit down and ask them, do they know all their little buddies? Now, you know, no child is going to personally be able to name 250 buddies on their close personal friends list. There might be 20 or 30 that they know, and the rest are friends of friends of friends. And they're the ones that you've really got to worry about, mm-hmm. because you don't really know who they are. I had a job recently where a girl had set her MySpace to private, someone had approached her site, wanted to engage in a conversation, thought he sounded all right for whatever reason, was a friend of a friend, went swimmingly for a few months, and then the tone changed, girl felt uncomfortable, didn't want to chat anymore, and then things turned fairly nasty. So, and that's a fairly common scenario. So with young people, you know, sit down with your child and look at what they're doing online. And one of the things I often say is that kids love to teach their parents things. They love to think that they can show you something. And, you know, make 4 o'clock Friday, you know, mum or dad's internet learning time. Get your children to show you where they go online. And it can be fun, and it can be a lot of fun to do it as a family, but don't do it with the view to be going back to check up on them. Oh. Do it that, you know, hey, I'd really love to know about instant messaging, and get your child, your son or your daughter to show you so you can learn together.
Let's talk a little bit about the law. The law normally is two steps behind technology. We've seen that in telecommunications, time immortal, I guess. There's new predator laws, there's Australian laws, and there's local laws. Are they keeping up with this new cyber terrorism, for want of a better term?
In relation to anything that we would call cyberbullying harassment, yes, we have a law that's it's called stalking, and it's written specifically for anything that's involving misusing a telecommunications device, basically, to harass or harm. There are federal laws, that's correct. From the Commonwealth Crimes Act, they have a Misuse of Telecommunications Device Act, and then we've got the child pornography charges as well, mm-hmm. which we can use. But, you know, as things progress, and, you know, it may be that legislation needs to change or things need to be added, but at the moment our stalking laws are designed to encapsulate the internet, faxes, emails, and mobile telephones and landline telephones.
Susan, does Victoria Police work with other law enforcement agencies around the world? Like, if there's a large operation maybe, or something comes to your attention that has ramifications overseas, do you work with similar people in your position in other agencies?
Yes, there was an example probably 2 years ago that was generated a lot of media where it was called Operation Axon here. It was a large-scale child pornography investigation that I think the National Centre for Missing and Exploited Children in America, NCMEC, sent a whole lot of information out to our sex crimes. You know, I think it was done through federal police, and then the federal police dished it out to the local law enforcement agencies. So, yes, there is cooperation occurring. Our federal police have a particular group that looks at internet safety, internet online sexual solicitation, and they do work with Victoria Police. And there's nothing, like when I was over in America during this training, I actually sat next to a police officer that said to me, look, I've got a job involving an Australian email address, so I'm at a bit of a dead end with it, can you help me out? So there's a lot of things happening, but we certainly do work with Interpol, with the National Centre in America, through our federal police.
That's great to know that the law's keeping up, and also that law enforcement agencies are keeping up as well.
We're sort of running out of time, guys, but to sort of wrap up this evening, what's the government doing in respect to educating kids, educating parents, probably more the point? Are there any websites that the parents can go and have a look at? Any initiatives that either locally, federally is underway at the moment?
Look, there are a plethora of websites on the internet that are designed to probably point parents and children in the right direction. The Australian government, the federal government, have put funding into a program called Net Alert. It's facilitated by the federal police. That's accessed online. One of the best ones that I found through my studies in America was one called Net Smarts. That's with a Z on the end. And that has excellent educational programs designed from very young users through to probably middle secondary school. And you don't actually need to buy it or anything. You can actually just click onto it and then your child can work through the safety lessons. There are tips for parents. There are interactive things. There are realistic vinaigrettes where young people have talked about the fact that they're victims of online bullying and how it affects them. So there's a lot of stuff out there. iSafe America is another really good site. But it's a matter of sort of wading through and picking out what you think is relevant to you. At the moment, I'm doing a lot of professional development presentations for teachers and schools, as well as trying to do parent education sessions as well to bring whole groups of parents in school communities up to speed in relation to this issue.
Susan, I think the message I've got tonight as a parent of a couple of young girls is to get online with them, have a lot of fun with them, and get them to show me the net rather than me show them the net. Is that pretty much where parenting should be at?
I think that's great advice. You've got to work with your children on this issue. Don't make it a standalone issue. Don't make it it's horrible, you can't go online because everything bad's out there. The internet is a wonderful invention. I can't imagine life without it. It's opened, you know, our world. It provides us with wonderful opportunities. But with everything, you know, there is consequences, there are responsibilities, and we just need to be aware of them.
So, very much. That's very much the case. I think get out there and use it and enjoy it. Senior Constable Susan McLean, thank you very much for your time this evening.
My pleasure.
It's certainly been an eye-opener to me and I reckon to everyone in the room here this evening.
Certainly has.
And maybe sometime next year when you get your feet back on the ground after all the studies and tourism stuff, we'll get you back in. We'll talk a bit more about it because I think this is a problem that's only going to get bigger and we need to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd love to help.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual power.
And I've got some residual power.
You can't turn off CDMA.
Listening.
In terms of the volume,
motorists have to give fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio. Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilometres. Don't open hands with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you.
Here's another great moment in technology
on Tech Talk Radio.
On the 19th of April 1965, the American trade journal Electronics Magazine published an article entitled "Cramming More Components onto Integrated Circuits." This article was written by an employee of the Fairchild Semiconductor Organization, Gordon Moore. Moore, a chemist and physicist, predicted that the complexity of integrated circuits with respect to the minimum component cost would double every 24 months. In the article, Moore said, "The complexity for minimum component costs has increased at a rate of roughly a factor of 2 per year. Certainly over the short term, this rate can be expected to continue, if not to increase." This prediction became known as Moore's Law and was invariably misquoted as being a doubling in processing power every 18 months. As semiconductor manufacturers came to accept this prediction, the more widely it served as a goal for an entire industry. Marketing and engineering departments spent enormous amounts of time and money in an effort to make Moore's prediction a reality. And despite the constantly evolving nature of the semiconductor industry, Moore's Law has held fairly true for the last 40 years. In 1968, Gordon Moore and colleague Robert Noyce both left Fairchild Semiconductor and became founders of Intel Corporation, now regarded as one of the largest and most successful businesses in the world. However, on the 13th of April 2005, Gordon Moore himself stated in an interview that Moore's law may not hold true for much longer, as transistors might reach the limits of miniaturization at atomic levels. In terms of transistor size, said Moore, you can see that we're approaching the size of atoms, which is a fundamental barrier, but it'll be two or three generations before we get that far. But that's as far out as we've ever been able to see. We have another 10 to 20 years before we reach a fundamental limit. This has been another great moment in technology on Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the summer series of Tech Talk Radio. Adam Turner's a regular here on the Tech Talk Radio panel. As a journalist, he's a writer for the Melbourne Green Guide and the Melbourne Age, not to mention a few other publications and online services. Every week, Adam has a view on technology, and we call it A View from the Couch. Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
If advertising is the price you pay for free content, are you stealing if you avert your eyes during the ads? Is it a crime to go to the toilet during the commercials? Is it wrong to block ads on websites? If the answer is no, then it's not a crime to use Adblock Plus. Adblock Plus is a free plugin for the Firefox web browser that automatically blocks advertisements such as banner ads, as well as those annoying flash ads which jump out of the page to grab your attention. The ad blocking debate has been fanned by the fact that some sites are now blocking all Firefox users because of Adblock Plus. Any site silly enough to do this should expect a massive user backlash that will shut them down much faster than lost revenues from a little ad blocking. The silly thing is that there are similar plugins for Internet Explorer and other browsers, but for some reason Adblock Plus and Firefox seem to be getting all the attention. Now, for a community that is relatively pro-choice when it comes to new technologies, the internet is full of double standards when it comes to ad blocking. Many tech-savvy people think it's their God-given right to skip television advertisements with their TiVo or Media Center, but then they get up in arms when people use Adblock Plus to block ads on their blogs. Apparently it's okay for me to skip the ads which support the free-to-air commercial television model, but I'll burn in hell if I block the ads which support the pro-blogging model. Now, I use Firefox and I use Adblock Plus, even though a large chunk of my income comes courtesy of advertising on the sites that I write for. So why do I block ads? Because web advertising is so bloody intrusive and annoying, and because it chews up precious bandwidth. I don't have a problem with standard ads, but I'm sick to death of flash-based garbage covering up what I'm trying to read. Flash is the curse of the internet. It's like trying to watch television while some idiot keeps standing up in front of you. Now, if you're on an expensive wireless connection such as Next G, that dancing idiot can cost you a lot of money. Some people would say that tolerating the dancing idiot is the price you pay for free content. In a perfect world, if I don't want to pay the price, I shouldn't consume the content. I'll stop using Adblock Plus the day everyone hands back their TiVos on moral grounds. Now, I've got nothing against advertising when it's done well. Advertising doesn't have to be intrusive and annoying to be successful. Just look at Google. Google has proven that the key to successful advertising is not to annoy people, but simply to be relevant. Rather than blocking Firefox users, websites should aim to offer their readers relevant, non-intrusive advertising. Adblock Plus users have the choice of exempting individual websites. If websites can convince their readers that the advertising isn't trying to usurp the content and it helps support the site, they might be able to convince many of them to stop blocking the ads. There will always be a few diehards who steal content regardless. This happens in all industries, retail stores call it shrinkage, but companies still survive. the digital rights management debate is proving that treating your customers like criminals eventually backfires. Website owners shouldn't make the same mistake.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You've been listening to the Tech Talk Radio Summer Series, and we hope you've enjoyed a few of the highlights from previous shows. We'll be back next week with more of the best of the last 3 years of the show. In particular, we'll be speaking with Hugh Williams from Microsoft. Visit the Tech Talk Radio website for more information on past shows, and feel free to drop us a line and say good day. We're always on the lookout for ways to improve the show, and don't forget the Tech Talk Radio Forum at forum.techtalkradio.com.au. Here you can share your thoughts and dilemmas with other like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners. So until next week, I'm Andrew McColl, and it's bye for now. Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, and podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM, Highlands FM and Queer FM in Western Australia. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.